We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the CHGO Bulls podcast. I am your host, Will Gottlieb. You can follow me on Twitter at @Will_Gottlieb. I am joined on a special HQ Friday edition by my good mate, Mark K at MK Hoops on Twitter. And we've got Lawrence LB in the background pressing the buttons. But Mark, Saturday morning, bright and early. It still looks like it's dark outside in your neck of the woods. How's everything
going? It is.
Happy
Not too bad, William. It is early. It's still daylight savings. You guys went to daylight savings a little bit earlier than we did, or somewhere in the US.
I think 2 weeks ago or a week ago.
Yeah. So ordinarily we would have been recording at 8:30 a.m. my time, but it's 7:30 a.m. It's a little earlier than usual. It's a little darker than usual. My coffee is a little colder than usual. To my chagrin. But I'm otherwise well, William. How are you?
I'm doing well, and as we kind of turn down in the end of the regular season here, getting ready for the play-in, you know, some of the storylines are a little bit stale, a little bit old, but I was listening to my my normal roulette of podcasts, and of one of them was the Dunked On Basketball podcast with Nate Duncan, and they did, usually they do like a, they try to do like half the league, the Eastern Conference in 60 minutes, and then they end up doing like four teams in 2 hours. But they did one that was focused on just four teams, and the Bulls were one of them. And one of the questions that they got on the Bulls was about how they would approach a rebuild. And obviously the trade deadline has passed. That's not going to happen right now, but it's always on my mind just how this team is going to be building. And one of the things that they talked about on that topic was basically whether Io and Kobe should be on the team as part of the next Bulls era, or if they should be on the move as part of their teardown. And I found that to be a really interesting topic because I think we've gotten to a point over these last few weeks, few months, where those guys being young players on good contracts, making not a lot of money and being as productive as they are, kind of felt like it was an obvious like build around those two guys kind of situation. But they laid out some interesting arguments for making them a part of a teardown. And so I wanted to get into that. I wanted to pick your brain on how you think the probably not going to actually happen rebuild might take place. But first, maybe just, Mark, what have you seen from Kobe and Io lately? I guess Kobe just came back last night, but let's talk about Io specifically here for a second. Just as far as what he's done over these last couple of games, two career highs, 34 points the other night against the Wizards, and 35 points to break his career high last night against the Rockets. He's been playing really well. I mean, we can spend more time on him in a little bit, maybe in the second segment, but I'm just kind of curious like where you're at with him right now on the whole.
No, look, I mean, we spoke about Io last week, if I'm not mistaken, and it's seemingly after that conversation he's gone on to be even a little bit better than what we were positioning. And obviously it's a 3-game run here. It's not a large sample. I dare say this 3-game sample is not representative of who he will be, But again, like Io in some respects has mirrored the theme of this team this season, whereby one guy goes down, Kobe goes down, a lot of responsibility gets put on Io. Initially, it doesn't work in that Clippers game. And then what does he do? He comes back with resiliency and plays a fantastic next three games. And like that to me is very similar to what this Bulls group more generally has done, in the sense that the way they started in the 5 of 14 stretch to start the season was obviously problematic. They come back and have since been, you know, 6-7 games above 500 doing the thing from that point of view. So I just appreciate the way Io goes about it, the fact that he's turned this season into something positive, particularly when the start of the season didn't necessarily look like it was going to be. The same is obviously true of Kobe. So this season, in many respects, it, to me, is all about what Kobe and Io have grown into be, how DeMar has fit in alongside and with these two, in addition to Caruso. Like, that's what I will be remembering this season for, and how this group more generally just hasn't given in. And like I said, Io's reflective of that. So I've been impressed with what he's been doing the last few games, particularly with Kobe out. Now, obviously, when he went off for his 35 last night, Kobe was back. But still, it is, you know, it's pleasing to see them. They're both taking steps like this. They've both exceeded my expectations to the point where I've had to recalibrate what I ultimately think they can be, which is a good thing.
It is. And we'll get into that in a second here. But first, I want to just kind of hit on what they had said. And so basically the question, the big question that they're trying to answer is like, how many, if any of these Bulls players would be on the next Bulls team? And Nate said, and this is a quote, Kobe White and Iodesumu to me are very good players and would be great fits on winning teams. They have less value to the Bulls than another team, particularly considering their low salary. In my version of the Bulls rebuild, Kobe White making as little he's making and Dosunmu making as little as he's making, it's not actually that valuable because we're going to have so much flexibility in our Sixers OKC style teardown. Those guys are never going to have more trade value than they have now with 2 years each on their amazing contracts. And you get more for those guys in the offseason. So I would move those guys. This super interesting topic because I really do think that we've kind of just accepted them as being part of the future. And obviously this isn't a very particular kind of hypothetical situation where they're doing a full on teardown. But what do you make of that? Just in terms of like Io and Kobe having, let's start with just high trade value, considering the fact that there are young players on good contracts and maybe how valuable they are to the Bulls versus to other teams.
Well, I mean, are they valuable to other teams? Like in terms of their contracts being so low, if they're going to exceed their value of those contracts and the extension rules being, what, 140% of those small bases, how many of these teams, assuming you were to trade Kobe or Io to a good team, how many of those teams are going to have the ability to extend them into 2 years' time? Like those teams are going to have the same situation or same issue that the Bulls will have in terms of re-signing these guys on an extension. Now, the Bulls probably won't be able to sign them to an extension. They'll have to use cap space to do so because Kobe's extension value of 18-ish or so million, whatever the number is not enough. So the Bulls will need to re-sign or extend Kobe via cap space. The same will probably be true with Io right now, who, again, is exceeding his production, or his production is exceeding his contract value, is probably going to exceed any extension he's worth. So like the Bulls, these other teams that potentially would trade for these guys would have to probably use cap space to re-sign them as well. So like I don't think that's different for the Bulls as it is any other team. And I definitely don't agree that these two guys are more valuable to the other teams than the Bulls, which I'm sure we'll get into. Now, full disclosure, I haven't listened to this podcast. I don't intend to. So I'm basing all of my thoughts on the snippet of quotes here. So perhaps there's some context here that I'm missing or whatnot. But on the premise at a high level, I just absolutely vehemently disagree, William.
Yeah, so you mentioned the extension numbers. Kobe and I both have 2 years on their contracts after this year. And they're both really underpaid relative to their production. So Kobe is making, I think, like $12 million or something like that. I was making $6 or $7 million. And the way that the new CBA works, you can only extend a player to 140% of the salary number that they were making in their final year. So for Kobe's next contract, if the Bulls were going to be able to extend him, it would have to start at $18 million at the very most. And obviously right now he's playing at a $20, $25, maybe $30 million a year type of level. IO, same thing, probably not up to that same level, but like $20 million a year for the way IO's playing wouldn't be that surprising, except for the fact that his extension would have to start at $10.5 million. So to your point about the Bulls having to re-sign them, they will have to be a cap space team in the next 2 years in order to do that. You know, they could obviously go over the cap in retaining them because they'll have their bird rights, which means that they can re-sign their own players by going over the cap. But at the point where they're at now in terms of their proximity to the luxury tax, that's just not going to be possible. And so I think basically the idea is you are, you know, this team that's stuck in the middle right now. And if you're going to trade DeMar and you're going to trade Vooch and you're going to trade Zach and you're going to trade Caruso, then you might like bring in some extra picks or players or whatever. But at the end of the day, like if you're just going to be re-signing some free agents or getting some new guys on the open market, like your upside with this team over the next 2 years, assuming you can get off all of those other guys for assets, is like not going to be a championship caliber team. And so by the time you have to re-sign those guys to higher numbers, you're in a position where you haven't really been able to accumulate any new assets, additional assets, younger players, cheap contracts to where you can fill in the roster around those larger numbers that Kobe, Io, and Patrick, who's not even really a part of this conversation right now, are going to be making. Or you can trade them to another team and collect some more assets for those guys. Now, at this point, they should be able to get a ton back for them because of their age and the amount of money that they're making. And now you kind of reset the whole clock on rookie scale contracts and extensions. So, I mean, I think it's an interesting point. I think the larger question there is just like twofold. One is like, are these guys franchise caliber players? If you move on from DeMar and Zach and Vooch and Caruso next year, which is probably not going to happen, but if you do, like, can Io and Kobe be the best player on a team that gets you into the playoffs or that gets you into the second round, which is, I think, probably, you know, where the Bulls are at least hoping to get to one day. So I think that's the number one question. And then the second question is, would keeping those guys prevent you from getting the next franchise player? So if you were to, you know, trade your big four of DeMar, Zach, Vooch, and Caruso, but retain Kobe and Io, would you be just good enough to be exactly where they are now, which is in the middle, unable to get a high draft pick, and not good enough to compete in the playoffs? I think that's an interesting question. To me, like, you see the way that they play without DeMar last night, and just the caliber, the execution, the way that he's able to carry teams in the clutch. Like, I do think that the bottom would fall out to a certain extent, and this team would not be very good without DeMar. I think they could still be competitive. They've still got some talent. Vooch obviously can step in and be a guy that draws to and creates offense and whatever. But I just don't think they would be, the floor of the team would be anywhere near where they are now with DeMar. But I also don't know that they would be as bad as some of these other Tank Commander teams who are going to be going all in for Cooper Flagg.
Yeah, look, I don't think that would be as bad as maybe the Charlotte Hornets or the, well, I was going to say the Spurs, but I mean, the Spurs have upward mobility, obviously, with Wemby.
It's like the Wizards, they're not
going to be that bad as those teams. That said, like, I don't know if Kobe and Io are that far removed from what the Pistons have going on right now. I think there's a lot of reasons as to why the Pistons are where they are in the standings, and that goes beyond talent. But the point being is, maybe they'd be comparable, like a team like the Raptors, as an example, who, since making their trades, they haven't completely bottomed out. They're not Wizards level terrible, but this isn't a good basketball team. It's a losing basketball team. It's a team that has a lot more L's than W's of late. 20 odd games under 500. You know, the sixth or seventh worst team in the NBA, something like that. That's kind of where I would imagine or envision these Bulls being without DeMar DeRozan. I think they would be, you know, the fifth to seventh worst team in basketball, like the Blazers, like we saw the other night. Now, do I think Kobe and Io are good, productive players that can definitely be part of your next winning team? Absolutely. Do I think they're your pillars of your next great team? No, I don't. I don't rate them in the same way that I would some of the other better, younger cores or two-man groupings or pairings across the NBA. I don't. but I don't also think they're an impediment to getting that star level primary guy either. Like, because I just don't believe, if you take away Demar and Caruso as an example, if Zach doesn't come back, you've moved him on, and it's just Kobe, Io, Vooch, and Patton, other guys. Like, to me, that's not a good basketball team. That's like the fourth or fifth, maybe sixth worst team in basketball. And at that point, maybe you can get some lottery odds in 2025, retain your draft pick in that 2025 draft. Maybe you land Cooper Flagg, or maybe you get into the top three and you get one of the prize guys from that point of view. So I don't think they're good enough to keep the Bulls in that 9-10 range, because to me, DeMar is the one that's largely doing that. But I also don't think they're, you know, poor enough to really bottom out in the same way the Wizards have. Like, and you wouldn't want to do that either. Like, Kobe and Io, the thought of trading both of these guys when they've been both such home runs and have given this organization or this franchise such an out. Like, just think about where this franchise would be if these two guys were just not like this, if they were playing as they were either last season or the season prior. Like, maybe it would be better in the sense that you'd be heading towards the bottom quicker, but yeah. Look, let's break it down more. There's a lot to get into. It's a fascinating topic, but before we do, William, can I read some ads?
Wow, classic Mark hijacking the hosting responsibilities here. But yes, you can read some ads. Let's hear about Chevy.
I'm just a company man who needs to stick to the timeline, you know, and I want to tell everyone about Ray Chevy, who has the best offers of the year during March Radness. Not Madness, Radness sale event, William. If you want to make your way down to Ray Chevrolet on Route 12 in Fox Lake, you can join in on the savings. Ray is one of the top-selling Chevy dealers in the Midwest, and you'll always be able to find and shop at one of Chicagoland's largest Chevy inventories. So I don't know about you, William, but I've got a few Chevys. They are perfect for tailgating, these vehicles. And get your hands on one with Ray from Ray Chevy during Truck Month. For a limited time, they are offering 0% financing for 72 months on new Silverados, with over 100 of them available. So they're going to go quickly, so you better get your hands on one of them. They've also got 125 vehicles under 20K. So if you really want to get some savings, Ray Chevy is the place to go. And even better, William, everyone loves free stuff. I certainly love free stuff. If you too love free stuff, you can head down to Ray Chevrolet in Fox Lake. And when you do, you will get a free oil change. All you need to do is mention CHGO, four letters. It's that simple. You get down there, you say those four letters, and Ray Chevrolet will give you a free oil change. So start off the new year right and schedule it in that oil change before April 1st. So visit Ray Chevrolet in Fox Lake or go to raychevrolet.com. They've been serving the community since 1963, and they've been helping us all find new roads, William.
Find your roads, and then let those roads drive you to Circa Sportsbook, where you can play some bets on the March Madness action that's going on right now with the tightest money line splits, because Circa Sportsbook strives to get those minus 110 splits, unlike other sportsbooks who rely on the minus 115 or minus 120 splits, and they keep as little money as possible on the large market bets like futures, golf tournaments, etc., especially compared to other books. They also don't limit winning players based on their winnings, unlike other sports books who do limit winning players. If you are a high roller, if you are making bets and you're hitting on all these March Madness games, you can feel secure that Circa Sportsbook is going to keep you in their app. And they even understand that there's a million other apps out there that are going to be offering other deals, but they are so confident in what they have to offer that they encourage you to download and explore other betting apps, to check out other lines, and they believe you'll keep coming back to theirs for the best lines. They also have real people behind the Circa Sports brand who resolve issues in a timely fashion, unlike the other books who use the dreaded chatbots. And all aspects of the app are being run by the same team that runs the main Circa Sports book at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, who hosted us for NBA Summer League last summer. Some of our friends, like I believe Hogue and Carm and Cody, were up at the Waukegan Circa Sports Casino the other day, placing some bets on some of these games. So a lot of fun action. You can go up there if you want to play some bets in person. But if you want to just do it from home, you download the Circa Sports Illinois app at circasports.com/Illinois-app to sign up today. Also, be on the lookout for Circa events, watch parties, and tailgates. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. That's 1-800-426-2537. You can text GAMB, G-A-M-B, to 833-234 or visit areyoureallywinning.com. All right, let's pick back up, Mark, on basically, like, can Io and Kobe be franchise players? Last three games, Io, 30 points per game, 2 rebounds, 7 assists on 63, 58, 100 shooting splits. Obviously, he's not going to be a 63, 58, 100 shooting splits kind of guy scoring 30 points a game. He's been on fire. But post All-Star break, 17 points, 6 assists, 48% from the field, 38% from 3, 90% from the line. How real is this run that he's on? Is he just going to be like a 15, 18, 20 point per game guy now? And is there upside even beyond this? I think specifically with Io, who's really turned things up here of late.
Well, I mean, so much of it's predicated on his insane shooting splits right now. Like, it's not going to be 63, 60, and 100 or whatever the stats were that you, the splits that you read off before. But even beyond that, like since January 1, like Io splits have been insane. So I certainly don't believe in the last 3 game splits. I'm also not necessarily convinced, you know, over the last 20 to 25, 30 games that he's just this level of shooter going forward. We need more of a sample. But I think we can confidently say that, like, Io can be a 12 to 14 point guy, someone who definitely can give you two-way basketball, someone who could be a poor man's Drew Holiday, something in that vicinity. You know, ignoring these high-level terrible comps that I'm making, I think, like, what he has proved is that he can be a valuable piece to a team, a valuable role player, one of your premier role players, whether as a low-level starter, high-end bench guy. I think that's what he's clearly established himself at base at this point, which is an extremely good player. Again, getting that level of player from a second-round pick is a good return. I won't credit Arturis Karnašovas because I just don't want to. But if I'm being objective, that was a good move. Can I be something more than this? Maybe, but how much more? I don't know. I don't think much more than this. Like, I'm not expecting I just to be a 20-point guy going forward, or has that ability to be that. Maybe he does if the, you know, the volume is there, but like the volume is only going to be there for a team that doesn't necessarily matter. Like, what is Io's volume? Where does he sit in the picking order on a team that actually matters? Like, I think he's ultimately probably your fourth or fifth best player on said team. Like, could he fill the Lonzo role on a team? Not in the exact shape or form, but like, could he be that type of player where, depending on that specific night, he can be anywhere between your third to fifth best player consistently? I think that's probably in Io's sphere, much as it was for Lonzo at the time that he became a Chicago Bull. But Lonzo was never going to be your one or two guy. I don't think that's going to be what Io is. I have more, I won't say faith, but I'll give Kobe more upside to being one, you know, that one or two. But I, even then, seems like a stretch to me in that regard. But I think what they're both shaping into is to being really good foundational starting level pieces. Kobe more so than Io, but Io has shown some stuff over the last few weeks to suggest that this guy can be a real starter on a real team. So, I'm impressed.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I don't view either of these guys as like best players on elite teams. I'm not going to say championship teams because I don't think they're remotely close to that. But like, if you're talking about like the next era of Bulls basketball, I could easily see both of these guys being fixtures in the starting lineup on that. The problem is that, to me, like, there's no way at this point to get the number one guy without making some monumental moves. And we'll spend some more time on the specifics as far as the difficulty that the Bulls are going to have getting out of the middle here. I think like they've proven that they can be really productive players. And I think circling back to this conversation from the first segment, like if all they can be is productive role players, like I don't know that the Bulls should be as attached to them as maybe some of us feel like they need to be right now because of how bad things are going aside from them. Like, you look at the rest of this team, it's 33, 34-year-old Vucin Demar, like, making things happen. It's 30-year-old Caruso being the defensive anchor. Guys that are going to be with the team for one or two more years, probably beyond this one at most, depending on what happens with Demar's extension and next contract here. But like, I think just this idea that like they have been really productive is not necessarily the same as they are franchise changing players. Like I think a lot of times when you go into a rebuild, the reason you do it is to just to find the next great player on your team. And I don't know that the Bulls have found that yet. I don't want to take that away from those guys and say they can't do it because of the way that they've improved. But I mean, even you're talking about some of these other teams like the Pistons, for example, or the Raptors that you mentioned before. Like these are teams that have players that could be the number one player on a title championship caliber team, right? Like if things continue to progress for Scotty Barnes, maybe he turns into that one day. Same with Cade Cunningham or Jaden Ivey, or, you know, maybe they get another top end guy in this year's draft. Like those teams have a little bit more potential to find that kind of upside that you need in order to become a championship caliber team. And I don't think that Io and Kobe are there right now. They're also a little bit older than some of those other players on their second contracts. And so the clock on extending them is a little bit more expedited in this situation. So I do think it's tricky. I'm not saying that the Bulls should get rid of them. I actually disagree with that. I think the Bulls should hang on to these guys because they're so good on such value deals. But the real problem there is like, then what else do you do? And I think that's just going to be the big question. I think a lot of people are curious to see if they're going to run it back again, if there's going to be any more creativity from the front office. And I think they owe it to Kobe and Io, who have been so productive on good contracts, to put the right team around them. I don't think that's an excuse to continue to double down on some of these mediocre to bad contracts that they've already invested in. So I think it's kind of a tricky situation, but I do think as good as they've played and as good as they have been, like 63, 58, 100 splits, 30 points a game, that's not going to keep up. Even 50, 40, 90, which is what he's basically doing since All-Star break, I don't think is going to keep up. He has improved a ton on the three-point shooting, 37.5% since All-Star on 6 attempts per game. That is really encouraging, the volume even more so than the percentage. But when I see big numbers like that, I think, you know, the fall-off is going to be hard. It's not going to continue. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I completely get it. But I mean, this conversation that we're having today is based on a conversation that Nate and Danny were having on their podcast, which was a very theoretical, hypothetical type conversation about maybe what the Bulls should do or what they would do if they were running the Bulls. But what they would do is not aligned with what Jerry and Arturis would do, or Michael and Arturis would do. And we touched on this last week. It was either last week or the week before, where we were speaking about the franchise goals and what this team more generally wants to do with itself. Like when people talk about Kobe and I not being franchise players and jettisoning them off for whatever value you can capture for them and really rebuilding and doing a Sixers style rebuild or an OKC style rebuild, the Bulls are never going to do that. The Bulls have no intent of doing that. That is not their goal. So we need to keep that in mind. And I guess, again, it just depends on what type of conversation you want to have. Do you want to have a theoretical, hypothetical conversation where all options are on the table, or do you want to have a more realistic conversation, understanding the specific remits or caveats that we're actually dealing with? Like, to me, that's more interesting rather than these pie-in-the-sky type conversations that will never ever fly from that point of view.
But I do think that, like, so right now, this is definitely more in the theoretical. We'll spend some more time on the realistic in the second half of the show. But I do think even when you're thinking about this in terms of the realistic potential options, like you have to be real with yourself about how much talent you have on your team and how do you go about acquiring more talent. And I think if you are deluding yourself about how good these guys can be or whether they can be franchise changing players, then, you know, you're not giving yourself a real chance to either build the right team around them or ship them out to another team in order to acquire those assets. So even though I agree this is like not really realistic or going to happen, I think it's an interesting question to try to figure out like how good can these guys be, because that has to be part of your decision making when you're talking about future roster construction.
Yeah, fair. But I mean, I don't think anyone's currently deluding themselves, or no one's serious anyway, that Kobe and Io are franchise players. And the Bulls haven't given us an indication that they value them as franchise guys. They certainly didn't in the offseason when they signed them to their very, you know, meager deals. The Bulls very clearly didn't think that these guys were going to be this level of player. If they did, then maybe they would have been more interested in retaining them on bigger long-term deals than what they ultimately gave them. So I wouldn't have thought that the Bulls had it in their planning, you know, 6 or so months ago that these guys were going to be franchise players. Now, obviously, the way these guys have performed and developed, maybe that's changed the thinking a little bit. But even then, like, again, to an objective observer, like, there's no way anyone could possibly look in Kobe and Io and think that these two guys are franchise level players. Maybe they default into that space in the same way that Kirk Heinrich and Ben Gordon and Luol Deng did previously, just because there was no other option. That these guys ultimately become your franchise level players for this team. But on a team that actually matters, that's winning 50, 55 games, no, Kobe and Io are not your top guys. They're just not, at least on their current trajectory. Again, maybe they continue to improve, maybe it changes. But I don't think anyone's thinking that or is assuming that. I think every objective person, whether it's a Bulls fan or not, understands that you need to add that primary piece. Like, thinking about the Nuggets as an example, and maybe this is giving these guys too much credit, but like, could I see Kobe in a Jamal Murray role? Maybe not 100% of that role, but like 85 to 90% of that role. Yes. Could I see Io being a KCP level of player, level of effective role guy, like your fourth or fifth best starter? Yes, I could. Maybe if I believed in Patrick Williams a little bit more than maybe some, then I could see him developing into an Aaron Gordon level, like role guy. Like, I can see all that happening. There's a path for all of that happening. Now, the obvious there is the Bulls don't have their Jokic or any player similar to that, their top five, top 10 guy, which is what we're talking about. But I'm not sitting here deluding myself thinking Kobe and Io could be that Jokic. I don't think that's possible.
Well, I think that really becomes the difficult piece here, which is how do you find that top five, top 10 guy if you're stuck in the middle? That's the whole point of mm-hmm. the treadmill of mediocrity, right? Is you are not good enough to be in a position to draft a franchise changing player at the top of the draft, nor are you good enough to be, really threatening in the playoffs. And until you make some major changes, it's going to be hard to get out of some standard deviation of the middle. And I think that's really where things are going to come to a head in this offseason, just with some of the decisions that they have to make. But I think larger picture, with the way that this team has structured some of the contract stuff, it's just going to be a challenge to get out of the middle unless something dramatic happens. And as you said, and I agree, it's hard to imagine something dramatic happening. So we will get more into the specifics of the cap stuff with regards to DeMar DeRozan and his extension, Patrick Williams, Lonzo Ball, Zach LaVine, all this stuff, and how the Bulls plan to build with and around those guys. But first, Mark, can we take a quick break and tell everyone about our friends at Coors?
I can, William. Well, the Bulls are in search of their franchise guy, their top one guy, their top five guy, whatever it might be. Friends, you don't have to look any further. I've got the top beer right here in my hand. Well, not yet. I will be later on. But yesterday, William, after a loss, the Bulls racked up a loss. Just that quest for 500, that ever elusive quest to 500. It was a disappointing loss yesterday against the Houston Rockets, and I needed something to just take the edge off, get me back into chill mode, particularly with it me being a Friday afternoon, Friday evening, heading into my weekend. I needed to set things right. And I did so by getting a Coors Light beer in my hand, sitting back on the couch, feeling better about myself, watching my son running around, realizing, gaining some perspective that there's better things out there than watching the Bulls versus the Houston Rockets. And I thank Coors for giving me that perfect perspective. I also thank Coors for, just being that social lubricant, getting around your mates, getting a beer in hand and chilling out with a beautiful, refreshing Coors Light in your hand. And if you want to do that, William, do you know how easy these guys have made it for everyone? It's actually too easy, if I'm being honest. It's a little too easy. But nonetheless, if people want to get there, when they get there, chill on. If you want to get a Coors Light beer in your hand, if you want to reach for one tonight when you're watching March Madness, whatever you're doing, if you're hanging out with your mates, then all you need to do is jump onto Instacart, go to Coors Light, or you can go to CoorsLight.com/CHGO basketball, and you can get Coors Light delivers straight to your door. It is that simple. All you need to do is jump on, like I said, that website, CoorsLight.com/CHGO basketball. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Yummy, yummy.
Also want to tell everyone about our friends at Empire Today, where you can shop at the convenience of your home for the right products for your needs, with quick and professional installation and a low price guaranteed. Empire Today is the best place to get new flooring, so of course they have copycats. But Empire cannot be beaten on quality, service, speed, and so competitors advertise lower quality products to cheapen their prices that Empire simply would not carry. Empire is not going to promise you those lowest prices, because anybody who's putting those floors in their homes would not be doing that in their own homes. They also have the best sample of curated products. Empire's philosophy is to help you find what you need, not to overwhelm you with thousands of choices and substitutes. What they leave out of their selection is as important as what they put in it. Empire's product team exhaustively comes through thousands of product samples each year to find the perfect styles. They also have the virtual floor designer. It's a great way to see what those new floors are going to look like in any space. It's easy. You just snap a picture and instantly see how new floors will look in your room. Shopping for floors at a big box store can be frustrating. You might talk to someone today who was working in plumbing yesterday. Flooring is all Empire does. They live and breathe flooring, so you can be confident you're getting honest and upfront advice. They also service their own warranties, so if you have an issue, just call Empire. They don't need to find any manufacturer, track anybody down, looking for phone numbers. So they make it so easy, and you can schedule a free in-home estimate today. All listeners can receive a $350 off discount when they use promo code CHGO. Restrictions apply. See empiretoday.com/CHGO for details. All right, Mark, I teased this before the break here, but I want to post, or I wanted to share something from a Casey Johnson mailbag post yesterday with regards to DeRozan's contract. And Casey's been kind of pushing the DeRozan is going to sign for more than you think agenda. And how does that affect things with the rest of the cap? Some interesting stuff here. So here's what Casey had to write in his mailbag, and I encourage everybody to go check it out. There was some other great stuff in there as well. But he said, I think the most likely outcome is a shorter term deal at a significant annual figure, maybe 2 years at $70 to $74 million with a team option for a third year. Just guessing here, he's eligible to sign a three-year $130 million deal before unrestricted free agency begins on July 1st. As somebody who is extension eligible, the Bulls can sign him at any point, starting right the second, all the way until July 1st, when free agency starts. If they do not come to an extension agreement before then, well, then he enters free agency, where other teams will have the chance to offer him a deal. But I wanted to kind of lay out some of the groundwork for what that would look like. So let's assume for a second here that the Bulls are going to not be able to trade Zach LaVine. I think that's just almost certainly going to be the case. Like, he's coming off of another surgery. He's making a ton of money. Teams were concerned about that stuff before he had the third surgery. Now he's actually having it. I mean, he's going to have to come back and play well at a high level for another, at least until the trade deadline, more likely another year or two, to just chop off a lot of the money that he's owed on that contract. So I just don't see Zach going anywhere anytime soon, unless the Bulls attach a bunch of assets to get off of him. And even then, I think with these new CBA rules, it's just going to be really challenging for teams to absorb that kind of money. So let's assume that the Bulls cannot trade Zach and that Lonzo is able to come back. He's not going to be the same version of Lonzo, but basically they can't wipe him off their books with the medically retired exception. So DeRozan back for 2 years at $70 million. That's $35 million annually. You can't trade Zach. You can't remove Lonzo. Let's say Patrick Williams gets the $12.9 million qualifying offer that they don't come to an agreement, a contract agreement for Patrick Williams after his injury. And, you know, he could obviously get a deal in restricted free agency that would be more than that. But let's say he just takes that, wants to play it out and become an unrestricted free agent following next season. His contract would be just under $13 million. Let's say Andre Drummond walks and Torrey Craig picks up his player option and the Bulls draft the rookie with the 15th overall pick. If all that stuff happens, and Mark, tell me if any of that sounds unreasonable, but just based on what Casey kind of guessed here, and again, I want to stress this was a guess, not a report, but if all that stuff happens, DeRozan for $35 million annually, can't move Zach, can't move Lonzo, Patrick back for $13 million, Drummond walks, Craig back, Bulls draft 15th. The Bulls would be $9.4 million past the luxury tax and $2.4 million over the first apron. In other words, as reasonable as all that stuff sounds, it's not happening. And I just don't see a way where they can bring back DeMar on that kind of contract without making another big move to open up space. And as I mentioned, I just don't know that they're going to be able to open up space to be able to do that. So you could say, well, look, the Bulls could start the season in the tax and then duck out of it at the deadline. But there's a couple of problems there. Number one, teams who are in the first apron. And again, the Bulls would be in the first apron if everything that I said before was true. They cannot acquire a player via sign and trade. That keeps them above the apron. They cannot sign waived players on the buyout market whose contract exceeded the mid-level exception, which is about $12.2 million. And the key one here is that salary matching and trades must be within 110% of each other rather than the 125% for teams not above the apron. In other words, if the Bulls are going to make a trade for Zach, they need to take back within 110% of the same salary. So even if they do trade Zach, if it happens during the season and they can't just trade him into somebody else's cap space, they're going to have to take back salary, which means they're not actually going to get any salary relief for trading him. So all this to say, it depends on how much DeMar wants to sign for. I think years and dollars both going to be huge here. But like, as reasonable as all that stuff sounds on its face, the Bulls are not doing that because it would put them way over the luxury tax.
Yeah. So look, I don't think anything you outline is unreasonable. I mentioned it last week, but the Lonzo wave and stretch is there as the nuclear option if needed. Now, I know there's a whole bunch of song and dance going on around Lonzo potentially coming back next season, all that sort of stuff, but I will believe it when I see it. And if Lonzo is not playing basketball at some point in time, then that's the way you get out of this mess. Like, that's the ultimate nuclear button, or the exit button, let's say. So I'm not concerned about the money because you have that option with Lonzo. I also don't think... I think Zach is movable. He may not be movable on July 1, but I think he potentially could be movable at some point during the season, particularly as he gets closer to being a guy who has two years left on his deal rather than the full three if you're trading for him on July 1 as an example. So I do think Zach... They're going to probably have to attach some level of peace with him, but they could get rid of him on July 1st if they ultimately really wanted to. But it's the question that we've, again, discussed on this podcast previously is, what should they, or should they be attaching stuff to get rid of Zach? Does that make sense? And it's connected to the whole Kobe and Ia thing. Like, if you want to build around those guys going forward, you probably don't want to be giving up additional assets, like particularly what it would need to get off someone like Zach. So I get that point of thinking too. I get your logic more generally, but connecting this back to the topic before around Kobe and Ia, like, this is why it makes sense to give DeMar a 2-year deal, not a 3-year deal, because in 2 years' time, you need to keep cap space open to re-sign Kobe and Ia. If you give DeMar a 3-year deal, even if it's at lower average annual value, fine, you might save some money now and duck the tax now, or, you know, whatever. If you just don't think DeMar's a $35 million player and he's closer to $20 million and you're happy to give him a 3-year, $60 million deal, I think a 3-year, $60 million deal for DeMar is more problematic than a 2-year, $70 million deal for me personally, particularly when you think more wider about the entire remit of the team. In particular, again, talking about Kobe and I, that if the Bulls can't extend them because their production exceeds that extension value, then the Bulls are going to need cap space. Now, if you're signing DeRozan to a 3-plus-year deal at that point, and he's earning 30-ish million at that stage, let's say 25, 30, whatever it might be, that number can't be moved. Or you're having to trade DeMar at that point to open up cap space for Kobe and Ia. So I would top end this deal for DeMar. I think it makes complete sense. A 2-year, $70 million type deal, whatever the number might be, makes absolute sense. In terms of, you know, the wider thinking of this team. Now, again, I'm operating from what I think they will do, not what I necessarily think they should do. I'm not sitting here advocating that the Bulls continuing this whole competitive continuity nonsense any further. Like, I'm not suggesting that that's the route that they should be taking, but it's seemingly the route that they're on. So if that is the play, then I think a 2-year, $70 million deal does make a lot more sense than a 3-year whatever deal for DeMar DeRozan. That to me makes sense. I'm not so doomer in the sense that they can't get rid of Zach or the whole Lonzo thing being here still and it being problematic. I think there are ways out of this from a cap perspective. It's not ideal. It's not perfect or clean, but I think they'll find a way to skirt under it. Similarly, again, like, there's no reason to think that they will do it, but I think they could trade Alex Caruso into someone's cap space, or, you know, for an expiring deal or whatever it might be this offseason, and still net a good return. I doubt Arturis will do that because he absolutely loves and adores Alex Caruso, but like that's an option there too that exists for you too. So I'm not so concerned about this whole money thing. And I'm not trying to be flippant or silly about it. Like I certainly understand the worst case scenario, which is what you outlined, but I do think there's ways out of it too.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if that's like the worst case scenario necessarily. I think of that as more of just like the problems that they're going to have to solve and maybe they come up with a solution. Maybe not. I'm less convinced than you that they're going to move on from Lonzo. I think they're going to continue to try to get him back. Not to say that he will be back, but as soon as he steps on the court, you know, it's not like they're just going to get rid of him at that moment. He also is going to be an expiring contract. So even if you do have to duck under the tax somehow before the end of next year, you know, you would lose him and that would open up some longer term space without him anymore. But I think the big question for me is just like, to what end? Like, why are we doing this whole song and dance to duck under the luxury tax, bring back the same guys, compete for a ninth seed again for two more years, just so that these guys can expire, get older and sign cheaper deals. And then you hope that Kobe and Io continue to turn into franchise players as like this inflection point between as DeRozan's decline and Kobe's ascent kind of, you know, get past each other. There's not a lot of sense in it to me. And obviously that shouldn't surprise anyone because I've been the one saying this all along that they should make some bigger changes. But I think I say all of this to say that, you know, with the exception of maybe like attaching a bunch of assets to get off of Zach or wiping Lonzo's salary off with the medically career ending injury provision, I think that stuff is like possible. I don't think it's likely. I don't really know like to what end. I think that's kind of the bigger question. And it's also why, I mean, you mentioned the DeRozan extension, your problem with it being 3 years as opposed to two. That's a really good point because basically right now you want to line up DeRozan with Vooch and Kobe and Io so that you have a clean sheet, presumably by that time, even if you can't do it next year, you'd be able to move off of Zach in the final year of his deal. So you line everybody up that way and then you can kind of reset things. But if you are attaching a bunch of picks to move off of Zach so that you can bring DeRozan back, on a shorter term deal, I think you just continue to kind of put yourself behind the eight ball and make life difficult, more difficult for you down the road to where it's even harder to get those franchise changing players because you're going to be in a position where you don't even have your own pick. So to me, like all this kind of ends the same way, whichever kind of variables you move around at a certain point, like it is going to have to result in a rebuild. And to me, like the problem with just waiting until the 2026-2027 season instead of just doing it now is that you might be able to collect some assets along the way, or at least not just waste everybody's time watching the same team that we know is just going to top out at being, you know, the eighth seed and losing in the first round of the playoffs. So obviously that's a separate thing altogether, but I do think it kind of circles back to this concept of, can Io and Kobe be franchise changing players? Can they be the best players on a team with a, you know, that takes, can Kobe and Io at age 25, 26 be the best players on your team to where you can re-sign DeMar and Vooch and Caruso at age 35, 37, you know, whatever, and still be competitive, but because Kobe and Io are taking you there. And maybe that's possible, maybe not. But I just feel like at a certain point, like however you kind of change around these variables and whatever buttons you flip, like that's kind of where they're heading, unless major changes take place. And I think that's really what it ultimately comes back to, is just like, in order to make any changes with this team, you kind of have to make massive changes. And when you think about it that way, again, I'm not saying the Bulls should trade Io and Kobe, but when you think about it that way, it makes sense to at least consider that.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I mean, again, hypothetically, sure. But again, understanding the goals and the ideals of this franchise, it doesn't make any sense. Like this isn't a team or a franchise that is interested in making massive changes to chase championships. It's just not. Like, we need to, as frustrating as that is, you know, piece of advice to people out there, make your peace with that reality. Like, the Bulls will hunt a championship if they, you know, luck their way into a Derrick Rose or a Michael Jordan or whatever it might be. But beyond that, they are not going to do everything that they possibly could do to go out there and try to create a sustainable winning team. And by winning team, I mean a championship contending level team. Like, that's just not in the cards for this franchise under this ownership group. That's not what they're interested in doing. So do I think a team led by Kobe and Io and a group of players can give you that 9th, 10th, maybe even a 7th or 8th, hell, maybe even a 6th seed at some point in time? Yes, I do think that can be possible. I think over the next 2 years, the plan will be to keep Io and Kobe in place, re-sign DeMar, keep Caruso, Vooch, add to that slowly, have this two-year window where this team can sustain itself and be in that 7th to 10th bracket, let's say. That is the plan for that two-year window. Thereafter, what will happen is they will retain Kobe and Io because these guys have been an easy out for this team. They will re-sign them at that point, and you know they will use cap space to do so. But instead of DeMar being there in 2026 or whatever year it will be at that stage, Vooch, etc. Like I mentioned this before, like what the Bulls will do in 2026 is do the same thing they did in 2021. They will find their new version of DeMar. They will find their new version of Vooch and Lonzo and Caruso, etc. Meaning they will keep Kobe and Io around, but they will replace the older brigade with a new crop of B and C level free agents who, again, as a group, as a collective, can bring this team back to being a 40 to 45 win group. That is the plan. That is the goal. That is what this franchise is trying to do. I certainly don't subscribe to this thinking or think it's the best path forward. And I definitely agree with you. Like, if the Bulls actually want to do something substantial or sustainable, then they have to make big, daring, massive moves. But that's not who this franchise is. And I'm not wasting my time or energy thinking about that just because it will mentally hurt me and I don't want to be hurt in that regard. So I hate to be a doomer about it in that regard, but I think once you think like that way and accept that just being who this franchise is, then you end up in a better mental state. I'll say that.
Yeah, I'm just not even sure that's true though. Like, I don't...
Why? Like, what part of that's not true?
I don't think that the Bulls in 2 years with age 37 DeMar and Kobe and Io in the final year of their contracts are going to be in the play-in hunt. Like, at a certain point, like, DeMar has been great. I do think he's going to start to decline. And if you mm-hmm. re-sign him and extend him, same with Vooch, like, I don't think you can count on being that good unless these guys take another jump. And as we've discussed, that's possible, but I just don't know that they're going to be in a position where they can even drag a team with, you know, a 35-year-old, 36-year-old Vooch and DeMar at age 37, and you know, you're going to lose probably Caruso. It's just at a certain point, like, to me, like the tires are already falling off, and instead of pulling over to the side of the road to call AAA, you're just going to keep driving. That's fine. But at a certain point, like, you're going to have to figure out what to do when all the tires fall off. And to me, it's heading that direction more than it's not. And it's also, I think, an inevitability that when they get to that point, they can't just like keep bringing in more free agents, more like they're not signing any. I just don't think that that's really like a viable longer term treadmill to be on. I just don't think that that's realistic even to just continue to get into the middle. So I do think that it's trending down at a certain point. And I think when that happens, they're going to have to make some moves just because I don't think that the front office will feel comfortable being really bad, especially unintentionally. Like, it's one thing to do a rebuild and give yourself some runway as a bad team. It's another thing to just turn into a really bad team because your team fell apart and now you can't get better. That's a much worse look. And so I don't know. I think that, you know, not to say that they are going to do anything, but or that they're going to like be daring and creative, because I don't necessarily expect that either. But at a certain point, I do think that there's going to have to be some changes, just because the natural cycle of things is going to push them in that direction. And it's going to be a little bit harder than just, you know, because at the same time, part of the reason why they were able to bring in DeMar and Lonzo and Vooch was because they were able to get above the cap, and they had one good player who was making virtually, you know, nothing. I mean, Zach LaVine was making $18 million a year. It's much easier to do that when you have one player to build around at $18 million versus now you have to re-sign Kobe and Io, and that's going to be combined 40 at the least. So I do think it's just going to be a little bit more difficult as things progress, and they're going to have to get ahead of it, because I think the one thing that actually would get this front office in trouble is getting themselves stuck in the tax without a way out. And the other point that I wanted to make on that is like this idea that, well, the Bulls can go into the season above the tax and then get out. Like, I just don't think that that's going to happen, because one, there aren't going to be teams who just can absorb a ton of money the way that the new rules are and the way that teams' salary cap sheets are. There's not going to be a lot of teams out there that can just absorb a bunch of money in the middle of a season. You would need to have a giant trade exception, or you'd need to be sending back money. And as I said before, if the Bulls are acquiring money back for Zach, even if it's like less bad money, or even if they have some savings, it's still not going to have a huge impact on their savings longer term, or even shorter term. So that's one problem. And then two, I mean, you're in a situation now where you go into the season over the tax and you have to get below it. And everybody knows in the league that you want to get below it. And everybody knows the only way you can do that is to offload what is considered to be a really bad contract in Zach LaVine. Like, the Bulls are going to have to attach two or three picks in order to get off of Zach. And I just think that that sets you up even worse. And yes, it clears up some space, but it clears out space to be able to keep running it back without Zach. And I think at a certain point, like, yeah, maybe this is just, you know, eternal optimism or whatever you want to call it. But like, at a certain point, they have to understand that even what they're doing is not sustainable, and what they're doing is just getting them to the ninth seed.
But I think that's the plan. I think that's the goal. And I'm operating from the viewpoint that building a 35 to 45 win team, a team that's in that 7 to 10 range, is the easiest thing to do in basketball. Like, if I'm operating from that position, which I think is true, then I think the Bulls can continue doing what they're doing and to find ways to get out of it. I hear you. At the same time, I understand what your point is, but I do think there is a reality where if it's not this offseason, and certainly the next offseason, where the Bulls have a pretty clean cap sheet. Like, there is a path where maybe not this offseason starting July 1, but maybe the next July 1, 2025, where Zach isn't on the books. Lonzo isn't on the books. Yes, you may have re-signed DeMar to a 30-something million dollar deal annually, but at that point, DeMar would be in his last year of said 30-plus million dollar deal. Vooch would then obviously be in his last year of his deal. There is a path where in July 1, 2025, your cap sheet is looking fairly reasonable. You might need to take that hit now this year in 2024, this upcoming free agency period, but even then, like I said, I do think there are ways out for this, ways out for them. It might not be on July 1 or whatever it may be. They may be over the tax come July 1, but I don't think it is this situation whereby it is complete doom and gloom from a cap point of view, and that it's going to restrict you from doing the bare minimum. And I think the bare minimum in a lot of respects can get them back or keep them in this stage or this playing stage where they consistently want to be. I don't think any of that's impossible. And I do think that is the easiest thing in basketball to do. And I think the Bulls, of what they've showed us through their actions, forget about what they've told us, but through their actions, that what their goals are is very clear. And I think their goals are so easy and so achievable that I think that even they, this middling franchise, can hit them. So I'm not concerned about it. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm being silly about it. But I don't think I think what their goals are so minimal and so low that I do think it's all achievable. I do think there is a path to get it done cap wise. And all they need to do is field a decent, respectable rotation that has 9 to 10 good players in it And I think that's possible, even with all the cap constraints that they currently have. Like I said, it might not be July 1, 2024, but July 1, 2025, and obviously in 26 and 27, I do think there is a path for them to, again, continuously field a team that could win anywhere between 38 and 44 wins. And again, that's the goal.
Yep. No, I don't disagree with that as their aspiration. I think it will just be interesting to kind of see, they just haven't done anything in 3 years, right? So at a certain point, they're going to have to do something just because it's going to be impossible not to. And I think that is what will be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how what happens the rest of the season affects that and people's decisions. I mean, all this could be a moot point if DeMar says, I don't want to be here next year because I don't want to be in the play-in game every year. So maybe he decides to take his talents somewhere else. We shall see. The Bulls are back tomorrow night against the Boston Celtics, the number one team in the league. So that will be an interesting game to see if they can get one game closer to 500. And then I think 11 more to go after that. So we are running out of time here for the play-in push for the race to 500. It continues, and we will be back for you all post-game after Boston. So until then, Mark, thank you for joining me. Lawrence, thank you back there for pressing the buttons and putting the CHGO locker ads there. As you can see on the YouTube screen, go check those out. If you want to get some cool new merch from the CHGO Locker, chgolocker.com. We'll be back tomorrow. Mark, thank you very much. Until then. We all silly like the mayor.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.